Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Emily Winicky and I am the Community Engagement Coordinator here at Syracuse University. I would like to begin, as we do with all Syracuse University events, by acknowledging with respect the Onondaga Nation, firekeepers of the Haudenosaunee, the indigenous people on whose ancestral lands Syracuse University now stands. I am now honored to introduce this morning's speakers. I will let each of them introduce themselves more, but I'll quickly run down the line for you. Today's panel on lead poisoning includes Saisha Bird, Director of Engagement Programs at Hendricks Chapel at Syracuse University, Katie Bronson, Director of Community Housing Initiatives for Home Headquarters, Robin Smith, Director of Strategic Initiatives at the Central New York Community Foundation, and Deborah Lewis, LMSW, Lead Program Coordinator for the Onondaga County Health Department. Please join me in welcoming Saisha, Katie, Robin, and Deborah.
In 2010, I was frustrated with renting from landlords that struggled to keep up on their properties. I was ready to live the American dream and wanted to purchase my own home. I fell in love with a beautiful house on the north side of Syracuse, built in 1850. The house had original oak wood floors and window trim, beveled decorative windows, and huge rooms. What was most impressive was the huge backyard that was perfect for my son to play in. I knew the home needed a lot of work, but I was willing to do what it took to make it my own. After closing on the house, I remember receiving a pamphlet about lead from Home Headquarters. I sat down and read it from front to back. I was sure this house, as old as it was, needed major updates and had lead paint throughout the house. I had already taken the first-time homeowners course at Home Headquarters, so I knew there were tons of grants out there that I could apply for to make my home safe for my child. I filled out an application for Peace Weatherization Program, applied for funding for Empire Housing, and called the Syracuse Lead Program to have the house tested for lead. A few weeks later, an inspector tested the house, and indeed, it tested positive for lead paint. The inspector found lead paint in the bathroom, the back hallway, around the windows, around the doors, and on the front porch. Because I was eligible for a grant from the Syracuse Lead Program, all of the windows were replaced, and there was indoor-outdoor carpeting put on the porch and the back stairs of the basement, and all the lead paint was covered. The contractor used a hemp vacuum to make sure that dust and paint were cleaned up. When the windows tested positive again, the construction crew came back and did one last cleanup, and we thought it was gone. In 2013, I had my second son, and 18 months later, another boy. As many moms can attest, it is tough having two babies in diapers. Over the summer, we spent much of our time on the enclosed porch playing with toys. It was a safe space for my boys to stay cool and enjoy themselves, or so I thought. At the end of the summer, I took my boys in for their scheduled wellness appointment. Their doctor was happy with their growth and cognitive development. He told me whatever I was doing a great job as a mom. About a week later, I received a phone call that shook my world. The nurse on the other end told me that the boys' lead tests came back higher than they would like to see them, and they asked me to bring the boys back for another round of testing. After their second testing, one of the boys, still my baby, had a higher result, and we had to keep going through the testing. That afternoon, I sat and I racked my brain thinking, how could they have been exposed to lead when I did everything I could to protect my children? After a while, I remembered how much time we had spent on the porch playing. I started looking up lead floors, lead in carpet, and fell upon an answer. The carpet that the contractors had installed on my front porch was indoor-outdoor carpeting with breathable fibers. During my research, I discovered that the carpet had to be backed by rubber to keep the particles in the dust from flying. I immediately started calling around and asking for help to replace the carpet. I called all the agencies that I worked with before to figure out who could help. When I finally reached Home Headquarters, I learned that they had a program called SHARP and that I could apply for funding to replace the carpet. As an extra step, I also got rid of all the toys that my boys had played with on that porch. I continued to follow up with the doctors to keep an eye on their results. After a few months, the boys' levels were lower. I'm so glad I kept a routine doctor's appointment and they were tested again. Having their tests done at the right time helped my boys immediately get the necessary care that they needed and helped me find out where the lead was hiding. For months, while my boys and I were going through this, I was angry, sad, and scared. I already knew the effects of lead poisoning and what it could do to children. I saw the effects firsthand when I was supervising a young lady that worked for the Boys and Girls Club with me. Over the summer, she worked for our youth program. She never sat still. She was always moving and talking. She had a big personality and was great at making people laugh. I always had to give her tasks that required her to move around all the time. One day while I was talking to her, I said, "Girl, do you have ants in your pants or something? You never stop moving." She looked at me and she asked if we could talk in the office privately. When we were alone, she disclosed that as a child, she was exposed to lead paint and had a very high level in her blood. Her exposure to lead affected her in many ways. It was hard for her to concentrate on one thing at a time, and she had a lot of energy that she had trouble controlling. From that day forward, I promised myself that whatever it took to educate others about the long-lasting effects of lead poisoning, I would be there to help do that. I then started to educate parents at the Boys and Girls Club. We coordinated with Syracuse Housing Authority and a few other organizations in the community, a wellness and health fair. At that fair, we had the city and county present to pass out information around lead. Right after I brought my home, I started going to my neighborhood TNT meetings. Later on, I started working more closely with TNT and neighborhood development issues in my neighborhood, such as neighborhood safety and how to deal with deteriorating homes, because many of the homes, as you know, are on the north side and around the city are older homes. I continue to talk to my neighbors, to my TNT group, with my friends and family about getting their children tested and how to protect their children from lead in their home. There are a few steps that folks can take. Check your children's toys. Make sure they don't let your kids play. Make sure your kids don't put non-food items in their mouth, especially toys from like Dollar Tree, really cheap, inexpensive toys. Cover your outdoor painted floors with rubber back carpeting and get your children tested.
Good morning. Again, I wanted to introduce myself. My name is Katie Bronson, and I am from Home Headquarters, and I am the Director of Community Housing Initiatives. And I love that story because I think it really shows and showcases the complexity of lead, especially in built-out communities like the city of Syracuse, where over 90% of our properties were built before 1980. So there's a good chance that there's lead-based paint in them. And the fact that there's a lot of continued need for those resources in our community and the continued need to continually address them, because it is so hard to completely abate the lead from a unit that we always have to keep a lead-safe environment and continue our need to find additional resources in order to keep our houses safe and healthy for the children that we live in. So I always find that such an important story, and I appreciate that you always bring that to the table, because it does show that we need to continue our resources that we have available in the city of Syracuse. And all of us here at the table, as well as a number of people in our community, have been working on the lead issue for many years. But what we have decided to do in the past few years is really take this approach as a community effort. As they always say, it takes a village. And it really does take a village to address the lead-based paint issue. And all of us are coming from different parts of the issue of lead, but we're also providing how we, as a community, can make this move forward. So one of the first things that I do in my background as being a planner and in housing redevelopment is I always look at three ways of how to move a topic or move an issue and improve what we're currently addressing. And I always look at opportunities, funding, and resources. And so throughout this presentation, I'll give you a little bit of how I looked at that with lead-based paint in our community and how we've worked together in order to make this happen. Because again, it's not about one organization, it's not about one person, it's about the community as a whole. So opportunity. I moved here from Albany in 2016, and I think it was a really great time to come to Syracuse. Because you guys already had a lot of resources and built enthusiasm about healthy homes in your community, but you were saying, let's make a change, let's make an effort to move it forward and find ways to address our healthy homes issues in the city of Syracuse. I came to Syracuse working with a healthy homes initiative called the Green and Healthy Homes Initiative at home headquarters for the greater Syracuse area, and that's to improve the health, safety, and energy efficiency of homes in the city of Syracuse. We received funding from the Central New York Community Foundation as well as the New York State AG's office to create this initiative and create partnerships. But really, when we started talking about healthy homes, we were talking about a lot of different issues, and we still are today, but the issue that came up over and over again was our lead base paint issue in the city of Syracuse. And really how we were at a place of how do we readdress it? How do we bring this back to the community? And also at 2016, there was also some other sort of hot topics that were coming around. Flint, Michigan had their water crisis with lead. And so that brought that back to, is that an issue for Syracuse or is it not an issue for Syracuse? And but it really brought it to the attention of a national issue. And again, not being a Syracuse issue with our older housing stock, but how it lead is still a national issue throughout the country. And so we also received some information about how Syracuse has a lot of children with elevated blood lead levels, specifically in the city of Syracuse. And again, that is because of our built environment and the age of our housing stock. That when these houses were built in the 1800s, 1900s, They were in good condition. But now, 100 plus years later, that's when the deterioration occurs. That's when the friction surfaces and the dust go into the air, and that's when it creates a challenge for our community. So again, it's the opportunity. The opportunity is we have to address our housing conditions. The opportunity was we had an initiative that was bringing health and housing care partners together to identify how to create a solution and what solutions do we need and how to bring more people to the table. 2016, we really were addressing healthy homes as a big topic, but in 2017, we really decided let's create a focus on lead. And so we created the Green and Healthy Homes Initiative Steering Committee. We created the Lead Poisoning Prevention Action Plan. And it finished in 2018, but we had four main focus topics that we wanted to address. Policy enforcement, what can the city and county do to increase their resources that are available as well as, improve what they're able to do as a municipality. Since then, there's been a lot of great improvements. The city of Syracuse has their Municipal Violations Bureau that has just started. They improved their rental registry, and now they are working on a lead ordinance as well. Those are great resources that we did not have at the table a few years ago. When we take a look at housing, we are looking at our built environment. Through funding from New York State and from the Community Foundation, Housing Visions has been able to provide new housing, lead-free housing, which is a great resource for community because we do need new housing in order to continue this effort of addressing lead-based paint in our community. And the Windows and Doors program. So we have a lot of housing resources that weren't at the table a few years ago. And I know Robin will talk a little bit more about their $2 million commitment. But in addition to that, the city of Syracuse received the HUD funding again, which ended in 2015, but they just received it this year for $4.1 million. And the county just received an additional $5.6 million from HUD as well. So again, this back in 2016, we didn't have $9.6 million, but today we do. So, we've been working together from all of our different resources and partners in order to each provide a piece of the puzzle, and that's where we're at with housing. At Home Headquarters, Home Headquarters has a wide variety of resources. Some of it is lead-based, some of it is more focused towards housing infrastructure and, roofs and sewer backups. But overall, the approach of Home Headquarters and our mission is to improve and revitalize our neighborhoods. So we have taken this effort as a focus of every line of business that we have, from the lending side to our real estate side to even our home ownership side, to provide education to people on creating lead-safe homes. So with housing, there's a lot of great partners there who have provided additional resources to make that happen. And then also health and medical field. You know, it's so important that we have this relationship between health and housing, because although we look at it in different perspectives, we all have the same point of view of decreasing children with elevated blood lead levels, you know, decreasing that amount of children with elevated blood lead levels. And so we bring resources together, education, the county works with the New York State Public Health Law and what resources that they're able to provide. And I know Deb will give you more information on that later on in this presentation, but we also have the Upstate Lead Poisoning Resource Center, where we're getting pediatricians involved and doctors involved and getting them aware of what's available in our community, because, you know, they see the child in a room, they see it in a clinic. If they're able to say, well, here are some other resources that you can do in order to improve the health of your home, I think that that's an important step as well, because they can only do so much, as well as housing can only do so much, but together we can do more. So we have built a really great relationship with pediatricians, and I think that's only something that is only continuing to improve. And then the fourth line of area is education and outreach, and I think that's a real strong portion of what we do, both with TNT has been a great advocate for lead poisoning prevention and lead safety. But we also have a number of other partners that are continuing to do that outreach. The health department does it in so many different ways, with working with pediatricians and providing a lot of education and resources. At home headquarters, we're actually working with some partners to create a lead safe video, so people know that although our houses might not be clean and clear from lead-based paint, but how do you create a lead-safe environment so it's safe for you and your children? And what do you look for when you are going to get a contractor to do the work? So those are just some really sort of big overview topics of how we've been addressing these things. But what I think is really the most important part is that, you know, where we were a few years ago was we were saying, okay, this is a topic, this is an issue. But now where we are today is we now have millions of dollars to address housing. We have a number of additional partners that weren't at the table back in 2016. And we have the interest of the community. I mean, I think all of us, as well as a number of our partners, continually to get asked to meetings like this and presentations, because it is important for people to be aware of what's going on, but also too that, you know, we get additional partners on board. And that's one thing I always ask people when we do these presentations is, what is your role in our community? How can you take that step to be a part of this solution? Because we all have a different role, and it can't be one person or one organization. It really has to be all of us here. Thank you.
Good morning, I'm Robin Smith. I'm the Director of Strategic Initiatives with the Central New York Community Foundation. The Central New York Community Foundation is the region's largest charitable resource. We use our grants and initiative process to identify the community's needs. Our funding is provided through a collection of generous donors who pool their funds together and then to make the largest impact in our community. So thank you for having me here today. I'm very excited to be in this panel with these wonderful women. I think you'll hear, or you'll find after we've all presented, that one thing that's really happening is this energy around lead paint poisoning prevention and ways and tools that we can use it. And from a funder's perspective, this is incredibly important to us. So for the past 15 years, the Central New York Community Foundation has invested a significant amount of resources in literacy rates, college access and attainment. And in 2016, when our relationship was created with the Green and Healthy Homes Initiative and some of the research that was created from the Lead Action Plan that Katie spoke about, we realized that a lot of kids in this community had elevated blood lead levels. 11% is the rate in Onondaga County, but some census tracts in the city of Syracuse are as high as 26. We realized that was undermining the efforts of all the resources and all of the funding that we have provided in some of these areas to provide a successful future for the kids here that live in Central New York. So as Katie and Saisha mentioned, that lead paint happens in houses that were built before 1978. More than 90% of the houses in the city of Syracuse were built before 1980.
So we know that lead is a toxin. We know it impacts brain development, and it has a greater impact on children, young children, children under six especially. And this is where we have been focusing a significant amount of resources with our work with the Literacy Coalition of Onondaga County and Imagination Library and the Early Childhood Alliance. So with this in mind, the Central New York Community Foundation Board of Directors approved a $2 million investment over the next 4 years, as Katie had mentioned. We realized that this lead poisoning is entirely preventable, right? So this isn't an issue that should continue to happen. So the board, along with staff, identified the best way to do this was a multi-pronged approach. So we did new housing construction with the Butternut Crossing, existing home renovations with our Windows and Doors campaign, community outreach and training, and workforce development. So in last year, our first round of grants, we funded the Greater Syracuse Land Bank, Home Headquarters, Tomorrow's Neighborhoods Today, Peace Incorporated, and Housing Visions Unlimited. We have found that we are investing in the two census tracts that seem to have been hit the hardest with elevated blood lead levels, 23, which is on the north side, which is near Duncan Bright, and 54 on the south side. South side Duncan Bright. 23 is near St. Joe's, sorry. But on the south, or on the north side rather, more than 16% of the children tested with 5 micrograms or higher. And on the south side, more than 26% of the children tested high. And we realized that focusing on specific census tracts gives us the opportunity to measure and show outcomes and best practices that we can then mirror and do in other census tracts or other areas, other communities in the city. We also realized that some of these houses are incredibly large. So by working with Home Headquarters, it has provided us an opportunity to work with rental units that are two-family homes. And this is where we, working with the county health department, we have found that these are the kids that seem to be the ones that are hit hardest in the rental property area. So Katie mentioned a little bit about the Attorney General money. That was for owner-occupied homes, which is wonderful. But homeowners might take a different way of handling things than a renter. You know, that is put back on the landlord. So some of the efforts that we did around education, outreach, and training was to ensure that the landlords knew what options they had available to them. Working with organizations such as Home Headquarters provided landlords an opportunity to get free windows and doors replaced so that they didn't have to worry about that extra cost. Some of our houses are worth $40,000. So to put $20,000 worth of windows and doors in them might not be an investment they're willing to make. And we think the children living in those homes are worth that investment. So that's what we plan to do. We have continued our grant process, and this year we've expanded a little bit. We're going to continue to work with Home Headquarters. They're also going to do some reach in some of the neighboring census tracts that we've worked in. Greater Syracuse Land Bank and the City of Syracuse came in for a grant. They are going to be renovating 10 properties and providing new rental, safe, lead-free homes to individuals who may be impacted by the I-81 transition. We're also working with the Lead Poisoning Prevention Statewide Advocacy Network, which is a group of providers along the thruway, the Rust Belt really, around legislation. Because again, in all of this work, we know that policy is one of the biggest issues. If there isn't rental rights and rental registries and the landlords aren't doing the things that they're supposed to be doing, this isn't going to change. So if there's New York State law requiring them to do that, we're going to see a big impact. We also are working again with Home Headquarters on workforce training and development. In this work, we've found that there isn't a ton of EPA-certified contractors that can do the contracting work properly without exposing people to the lead paint dust. So Home Headquarters is working with us on training contractors. Tomorrow's Neighborhoods Today, which Saisha mentioned, is a grassroots organization who works in all quadrants of the city on education and outreach. And then WCNY, this is our newest grant. They're going to be creating PSAs, public service announcements, and running them during WCNY programming and also their PBS Kids channel, which is a 24/7 channel. And that we found is one of the markets that is a channel that is watched and viewed by mostly lower income families because that channel is free, but also it's 24 hours a day, so children can watch it at any point. And the goal is to encourage families to contact 211 to find out what the resources are that are available to them, whether it's getting your child tested, getting your home tested, or if your child has already been tested high, what can you do then? We realize as a foundation that safe housing isn't affordable and affordable housing isn't safe. So we're doing everything we can to make sure that we are having the largest impact in our community. And we're very excited to work with the partners here at the table, but also some additional partners and nonprofits in this community. We have found that there are many layers to this onion, but we're getting there. And I think as a community, we are all realizing the importance of that. And as Katie had mentioned, with the new funding to the county, the new funding to the city, and the community foundation money, we will be able to leverage funds and make a difference that will be a huge impact on the children in this community. So thank you.
Good morning. Boy, that said it all. Safe housing is not affordable and affordable housing is not safe.
Yes.
That is really the catchphrase for all of the work and energy that's gone into the housing side of lead poisoning prevention this year. We hear more and more about families who are living in substandard housing and the struggles that they have with actually getting into a home that's safer. This infographic I really love. This is the impact that lead has on our country. This is from the CDC. We know some of these numbers by heart, like how much we save when we invest in a property using a HUD lead hazard control grant. We know how much we can save if we prevent lead poisoning in the first place at the national level. So we've been sort of looking at what does that mean here on the ground in Onondaga County? And so what if in all the kids born in 2018, none of those children were exposed to lead? What would that mean for this community? Well, it would mean that Onondaga County would save approximately $62 million in costs associated with early intervention, medical costs, special education across the life of that child. So, I mean, that's really impactful. These are just estimates. It's based on a national model where some of these, the calculations have been tested and confirmed over time from some of the world-renowned researchers in lead and lead poisoning prevention. And so I think that's really the takeaway here is how do we protect every single child in our community? You've heard already, it takes a village. It takes every single one of us, and we all have our role to play. The impact of lead on child's growth and development is known. We know that no amount of lead in a child's body is safe. We know that when a child is impacted by lead, they have the potential of having learning, growth, behavioral, and cognitive delays that will affect them throughout their life. Lifetime health impact in terms of other conditions like heart disease and kidney disease that's been a subject of research right here at Syracuse University through the lead project here. And, how do we avoid that? Prevention. Prevention is the primary strategy in addressing lead in our community. It is virtually impossible to make every single property in our community lead-free. Lead safe is the goal, and that requires a lot of proactive investment in housing in our community, routine paint maintenance, ongoing education of families to make sure they have the tools and information and education that they need to keep their children safe in their home. Very simple strategies like ongoing cleaning and attention to detail about painted surfaces, both for owners and renters, is critically important as a safety measure to keep children safe where they are. So what is the health department's role in all of this? Every single child that has a test in Onondaga County has that information reported up to the state health department. Every local health department then receives that information back from the state health department, where we accept responsibility both for the test result and for any follow-up activities that are required for the child based on the child's test result. We are also responsible for ensuring that follow-up services are provided to each child with a test over 5 micrograms per deciliter. And that means that the state health department is putting the responsibility of making sure the providers, the healthcare providers in our community are doing comprehensive medical evaluation and providing referrals and services for children who are identified as in need of them. The health department also does the home-led inspection to determine environmental risk, which is a little different than the kind of inspection that's done for a HUD grant. Our assessment is based on deteriorated surfaces. So we're looking at intact versus non-intact paint. Any non-intact surface that is in a home is tested by a health department-led inspector, and those are the focuses of repair for the owner. Landlord, private owner, it doesn't matter. Those surfaces have to be properly prepared, treated, painted, and stabilized for our office to end and close our follow-up for that family. It's very different than a code inspection. Code inspections are looking at health and safety a little bit differently than a lead risk assessor is. But we are all partners in ensuring safe and healthy housing. So one of the things that happens immediately after a lead paint inspection is the information is shared to the city of Syracuse for all city properties and entered into the city's codes database. So they know when we've done a lead inspection, when findings have identified lead-based paint hazards, and when the property is cleared. We're building capacity in that reporting and follow-up activity right now, and thanks to some local additional funding, we're going to be able to bring on a couple of more inspectors next year and some additional care coordination staff to help to meet the increased demand for comprehensive services for children in our community. And that is a direct result of a change that New York State Department of Health made that went into effect October 1st. In the past, the health department responded just based on a child who had an elevated test result, and it was, you know, back in the day, it was 20 micrograms per deciliter, which when we hear 20 now, we're like in hyperspeed trying to get to the family and to address all of the challenges they may have with their housing and with the child's health. That same level of comprehensive services is now being provided to every single child with a level over 5. What that means is that our caseload has dramatically increased in Onondaga County and that we're going to change our model a little bit about how we address the needs of the families in our community. We also coordinate services with local resources like both of the city and county HUD grantees, home headquarters, code enforcement, public health nursing teams, local lead experts from the Lead Resource Center at Upstate, and more. Ooh, my slide got messed up. Okay, so one of the things that came out of the intensity of focus on lead in our community was the need for people to be able to see data in a way that was meaningful to the community. It's been historically really difficult for public health entities to share information about their work because we're very careful about protecting the privacy of individual health information. But we figured out with the urging and encouragement of the Community Foundation how to put information on our inspection activities and blood lead testing information on the website. So now, for the first time, beginning in late 2018, there is information that is publicly available on the lead program's webpage. And what you see here is one of the pieces that will be available on the webpage ongoing, which tracks and trends information about blood lead testing activity over time. You can see that there's a general trend downward in the number of children who are identified with elevated blood lead test results in our community, but it's still higher than we like, and we have work to do. We continue to be in alignment with state and national trends in the decline in the number of children overall who are impacted, but we also know that the children most significantly impacted in our community are those who live within city zip codes, children living in poverty, children who live in areas of the city where there is a high percentage of rental property, and you know, substandard housing conditions from landlords who don't necessarily live in our community. We also see that when we're looking at the maps, which are also on our webpage now, that you can see that over time, some of the areas of the city that on the left, your left, 2013, those areas are a little darker shaded. And if you look at the map next to that, that map is from 2018, and the overall shading is just a little bit lighter, which means there are overall fewer children impacted in those areas. So one just quick note on data. You know, data serves a lot of purposes, and it is available for interpretation. And in our community, there has been a lot of coverage of lead that is based on data that's provided by a number of sources. Some of the data sources that report on lead are incomplete. The CDC does not receive reporting from every state for every child tested. And so the data sets that are available from them may be incomplete. Data from individual laboratories may also be incomplete and not representative of a community. And so one thing that happened around the same time that Energy started building about green and healthy homes and starting to look at lead in a more comprehensive way was that a story was published in a reputable journal that listed Syracuse as the city in the country with the highest lead poisoning rate, 40%. Patently untrue. The information that was included in that article referenced data from an incomplete data set from the CDC and information from a laboratory that only had test results from the most vulnerable children in our community. And those test results were from children who were actually tested by the health department. So it was an incomplete data set that led to a faulty conclusion that was not representative of children in our community. So just a word of caution when you're hearing statistics from our community that the information that is posted on the county health department webpage is always related to the number of tests reported and based on the number of children tested. It is not intended to be representative of all children in a category who might have been eligible for testing. It is not intended to be representative of all children who live in a neighborhood who might have been eligible for testing. And all children who are 6 years and under are not necessarily due for testing. And so look at the background information when you're looking at and reading stories about statistics in our community to find out exactly who they're talking about when they're telling you the statistics that are locally relevant. I think that this new resource is really a great benefit to the community. It certainly proved its worth to our partners in helping them target and plan their initiatives in Census Tract 23 and 54, which have been historically difficult communities to see impact on children's lead levels. And we're very grateful that the Community Foundation has taken leadership in focus on those two areas. So one new thing that's happening this year is this change in how public health and medical providers are charged with following up on children with elevated blood lead test results. October 1st marked the start of this change and increase comprehensive services to children with elevated blood lead tests in consistent with what the CDC's current reference value is. The legislation also sets forth a condition that the State Health Department will modify that level based on any other changes to a national statistical survey that may further lower that value below 5, which has benefits and challenges because of the testing equipment that's used for analyzing lead. So you can see that there are very specific responsibilities on the provider side and very specific responsibilities for public health that really put the onus of follow-up and evaluation on the private physician. A child's medical provider is their first source of evaluation for hearing, vision, the provider of immunizations, evaluation of their physical growth, development, and cognitive abilities, and having routine well child care is very important to children's growth and development. We are really pleased to see that of all children tested in Onondaga County in 2018, about 94% of all children who were lead tested were tested by their individual provider, which is great news for us. One of the things that will be happening through the end of the year and into the beginning of next year is an intensity of educational services being rolled out to local doctors' offices, both from the State Health Department and from local health department lead poisoning prevention programs. The New York State Health Department expectations are pretty clear. Providers are required to test at age 1 and age 2 and to provide any follow-up services as indicated by the child's test result. Any child who has an elevated test result should be receiving a developmental assessment, a nutritional screening, including an iron status evaluation, which is a blood test to make sure that the child's health has not been negatively impacted. Often we see iron deficiency and lead are hand in hand in young children, which iron deficiency can lead to pica, which can lead to putting non-food items in your mouth, which can lead to lead poisoning. So those things are all intimately connected. And one of the other evaluations that the provider is responsible for making sure happens is the environmental risk assessment. So that puts us hand in hand with the provider to make sure that on both sides of the equation, the children's health is being addressed and the children's environment is being addressed. On the local health department side, our challenge is to make sure that providers know what they need to know. And unfortunately, one of the obstacles to them getting information in a timely manner is the upkeep and maintenance of one of the two registries that store information for their patients. There are actually two registries at the state level that contain information on blood lead testing. One is exclusively for the use in state and health and local health departments. The other is the state's immunization registry. And so back to data a little bit. When you hear about the percentage of children tested in a community, that's driven out of the immunization registry, which is only as accurate as the upkeep and maintenance of an individual practice patient record. And so, you know, in our community, we've heard 60% of kids have been tested in Onondaga County. That's a falsely low assessment, because what we learned earlier this year is that some practices didn't know they had to do some cleanup and maintenance of that particular database. And now that they are and they're aware of it and receiving some training on how to make that more accurate, we're seeing some of those numbers climb for practices that were earlier this year considered underperforming. Beginning of 2019, the State Health Department rolled out a list of underperforming practices, notified those practices that they needed to step it up, and encouraged local health departments to directly outreach to those practices to provide technical assistance. Those activities will continue throughout the rest of this year and into next year to make sure that all of our local providers are proficient in managing their own data, can run reports for children in need of follow-up testing, can anticipate which children in their practice might need testing, and can look at their own report card. The little report card that's up here is from a very well-performing practice in our community, and this is here because it's representative of the majority of our practices. Pediatric practices that dedicate their practice to taking care of young children are really good at doing lead testing in office and following up on their patients. We have a little bit more challenge with practices that have a mixed population. Family medicine practices might be considered lower performing because they don't know what they don't know. And there are competing sets of regulations that dictate pediatric services to providers. And so that is a focus group for the local health departments right now, is to make sure that all of our family medicine practitioners understand the role and responsibility of their office in the care of children in their service. Thank you.
Questions?
Could someone speak to the ordinance and also kind of the relationship, I'll call it that, with the landlords, what some of the challenges have been, and what's changing?
So the city of Syracuse is developing a lead ordinance. It's currently under review, and the hopes is that it will be out to the public in early springtime of 2020. Mm-hmm. So that is as much information as I know right now. They're currently reviewing it. They have to do what's called a GEIS, which is actually a very lengthy process to make sure that this ordinance is appropriate for our community. And so that's where they're sort of in the midst of right now.
Yes, so the EEIS is in process right now, but I will say that a lot of the legislation recently has improved. So there's the rental registry laws, as Katie mentioned, there's the Office of Adjudication, and there's also, they updated the laws to also include interior inspections and not just exterior inspections. So we're getting there. We are making progress. So that's very exciting.
And as for the relationships with landlords, I think we all work with that on some base. With home headquarters, we do have the training program that is for both landlords and contractors to get the one-day training for renovate, write, and painting rule. There's actually one today, and I know some landlords are going to it as well. When we do mention it to them, people are eager and interested in getting that information, because I think Deb pointed it out correctly. Many times they just don't know. We have a lot of smaller landlord companies out here that might have two or three buildings. So they might not know all of the laws, and they might not know what are the requirements for lead-based paint when you own and rent property. So we have been providing that information to landlords, and we've seen a lot of great interest from them. We actually were just interviewed by Spectrum on Monday with a landlord that talked about how he received the training, how he was able to do some of the work himself, and he was really showing like the correct approach to addressing lead-based paint in his property. So there's interest there, but again, that's always something we have to do is continue to educate the landlords on how to address lead-based paint appropriately.
There's a resource in our community for landlords that is another great hidden secret in our community about how people get information. Syracuse Tenants Network does a landlord training, which is an all-day workshop that helps landlords learn all of the ins and outs about the responsibilities of owning and renting property. The health department also has a grant similar to what Home Headquarters has to provide training for owners that are under violation from the health department. One of the requirements is to either use a certified and trained worker or to take the training themselves. And our inspectors are directly reaching out to those owners to make sure that they understand those responsibilities. I don't want to speak for the city because they're not represented in the room, but I'm aware from other presentations and for the three town halls that we had in the last couple of weeks that city code enforcement has significantly changed how they do business and how they're interacting with their individual little part of the city. Because of now the way that their geography is split up for each code enforcement officer. They all have responsibility for their own territory, and they're all, you know, actively trying to engage with both tenants and owners in their communities to make sure that people understand the roles and responsibilities of each.
I am wondering what the situation might be in the rural areas. I mean, certainly we have older homes, and I'm wondering if the incidence, you know, per population or whatever, is as much of a problem there, and whether or not these older homes would in fact be lead contaminated.
We see pockets of parts of the county outside the city where there are older homes, like our towns and villages certainly have a lot of older housing stock. They have been the focus of outreach by all of us here at the table, as well as the two grant programs, to make sure that families in rural communities have access to the same resources for housing repair that folks in the city do. In terms of the prevalence rates outside of the city zip codes, it is somewhat lower, but we do see, you know, more likely within towns and villages there are children who are impacted.
Thank you for the good work you all are doing. It's such a good example of what we call collective impact. Just following up on the landlord issue, is there any way of vetting people who want to buy property in Syracuse? I'm thinking they have to sign a contract or agree to certain conditions. We do such a good job of hauling landlords in after the fact. I'm just wondering if there's some proactive way to deal with this.
Wouldn't that be great? I know that there are some requirements for owning property within Onondaga County and within the city. I'm not as familiar with the specifics on that, but there has been some discussion about how to improve accountability for local landlords. I know the land bank certainly, when they are considering an offer on a property, they consider residency as one of those things. Having an entity that is in the community that can be served notice by an enforcement entity is important. And there's language in both city and county regulation that requires it. I'm not sure how aggressively that's enforced.
Good morning. I'm just curious, congratulations on your progress. How many kids maybe aren't kids or their families aren't compliant once they get a lead test and then there's no follow-up? Are the vast majority of our kids being treated and our parents being compliant?
That's a tough question to answer. You know, generally speaking, parents are very concerned about their children's health and do their best to make sure their children are tested on the schedule that is required by the state, to make sure they're receiving follow-up evaluation and services. We have heard through the town hall process about obstacles that families in our community face, transportation being one of them, access to a provider for folks who receive Medicaid or public health insurance is a concern. It's not easy to go to a practice where you're waiting for a couple of hours to be seen by your provider, and then you need to wait for a couple of hours more to have a lab test done for your child because it's not done within the office setting. Not every one of our large clinic sites have the ability to test during an appointment, and so that is a challenge for families. But I would say the majority of families that we're interacting with do their best to comply in a timely way. And the ones that are having struggles with, that's why we have care coordination services to assist families with addressing those obstacles.
Admitting ignorance, could someone explain how mechanically you remediate lead if it's in a home? I don't think I heard that, or if I did, I apologize, I missed it. What do you do?
Well, there's a lot of different measures to make, and depending on what piece of, let's say, wall or window you're addressing, there'll be different recommendations. If you're talking about friction surfaces, that includes many times windows and doors or where porches where people are walking in and out a lot, where the dust comes up and the chipping and peeling paint occur. It's often recommended to remove and replace because, again, those friction surfaces, you might paint it over, but it can come back after you've been opening and closing the door or windows so many times. So many times when it comes to that, you want to do removing and replacing. But when you're talking about, let's say, a wall, you know, if the wall is in good condition, if it you don't see any chipping and peeling paint, or if you do see chipping and peeling paint, by using a wet cleaning method to scrape it and then painting over, that's a good way of encapsulating it and you know, stabilizing it. So that's often an approach with a wall. So it depends on the situation. And you know, the walls, I think, is actually where it gets complicated, of where it's hard to fully abate it. Windows and doors, removing and replacing is, you know, where we receive funding, where it's acceptable with HUD-funded programs and things like that. But when we talk about walls, when we talk about, you know, painted surfaces, milk boxes, for some reason, always come up on, I know, haven't you noticed that? Always on lead risk reports, you always see milk boxes, which is something you always forget about. But if you notice, most of your homes probably have milk boxes if they were built a number of years ago, and they probably have lead-based paint in them. But many times it's to encapsulate or stabilize.
Or place a permanent barrier. So mm-hmm. in some homes where, you know, taking down all of the plaster and lath might be challenging, it is appropriate to put a barrier between the occupants and the source of the exposure, which could be drywalling over existing walls. It could be placing paneling on the exterior. It could be siding. So, you know, if it is a permanent barrier, is interpreted to be something that's going to last 20 years or more. So those are routinely pursued remediation strategies by both of the HUD grants and some of the strategies that the landlords who have been in our community a long time, who are invested and own multiple properties they want to maintain in a safe condition, have been starting to add into their repertoire.
Growing up, I was taught to only use cold water rather than water from the hot side of things. And I'm wondering, is that still a notion?
Yes, absolutely.
Because when I've mentioned this to millennials, for instance, they've never heard this before. Mm-hmm. And so that I'm just wondering how significant a problem it is to use hot water and what the mechanics actually of that is.
Think about the hot water tank, right? It's kind of a repository for water that sits there and stagnates over a period of time until it's used and flushed out. You think about cold water. When you run the cold water, you're eventually flushing everything in the distribution on the inside of the house and bringing in cold water from the source. The main water supply for the city of Syracuse is a very good quality and does not contain lead. So the service lines leading into older homes and the plumbing distribution inside the home may have lead pipes in it, but running and flushing the cold water will bring in fresh cold water from the distribution system that is generally free of lead. One little tip that we learned over the past couple of years is make sure you're changing out the aerator that's in your kitchen faucet, your bathroom faucet, because that catches all of those little fine particles that you might not see, so change that and rinse that out. The hot water, it could mobilize other toxins that are within the plumbing distribution system. You know, some places have lead solder, some places have rust. There's, you know, all kinds of things in your hot water tank, so it's healthier overall to use the cold water and run it.
So could you just talk a little bit more about that? You know, has there been an evaluation of the water distribution system about lead? And then secondly, I read in JAMA Pediatrics a couple months ago that there is a relationship between lead and fluoride, and Syracuse does fluoridate its water, unlike other places nearby like Ithaca, Albany, et cetera. So I'm just wondering, how are you evaluating that? Because supposedly they act in tandem to impact young people in particular.
I can't speak on lead and fluoride. I would love to see the article so that we can consider what the potential health impact is for our community. But in terms of the city water distribution system, it is tested routinely. And there is a report that comes out every year about the water quality. It is required for every water system and water authority. We have several municipal water authorities throughout Onondaga County, and they each have to do their individual testing and evaluation of lead contamination and other contaminants as well. E. coli, for example. Those reports are publicly available.
All right, please join me in thanking Robin, Katie, Deb, and Saisha.